Responsibility. Jordan stared at Otero as he tried to frame his answer. The people of New Earth are few, and their race is very ancient. Their predecessors, intelligent machines, Otero interrupted. Yes, said Jordan, intelligent machines that represent a civilization that is millions of years older than our own. Those machines built New Earth, built the planet, and populated it with human-like people to attract our attention. They wanted to warn us about the death wave, and they asked our help in saving other worlds.
The New Earthers can't do the job by themselves, then, Otero said.
That's right. They need us. They need our strength, our vigor, our courage.
But these machines, these predecessors, as they're called, can't they do the job?
For the past several thousand years, the predecessors have spread themselves through the Milky Way to save endangered civilizations. But the machines are millions of years old. They're not immortal. The one that built New Earth has died. Its intention was to get us to carry on the work of saving the intelligent species in our region of the galaxy. It lived long enough to pass the torch to us. Now it's up to us to save those other worlds. And ourselves, of course.
Hunching forward in his seat, Otero asked, Why us? Why can't someone else do the job?
Because there isn't anybody else, Jordan replied. Like it or not, we're the most advanced civilization in this sector of the Milky Way galaxy.
Except for the New Earthers.
They're not strong enough. They were created specifically to recruit us to save the others. As I said, we have the strength and the tools. The question is, do we have the heart, the will to save the others?
I wonder, said Otero.
We have to do it. Intelligence is very rare in the universe. There are only 6 other intelligent species in our area. 6 out of millions of stars and planetary systems. We can't just let them die. That would be inhuman.
Despite himself, Otero felt awed. That's a big responsibility.
Yes, but I believe we're up to it. I believe that the human race can face this challenge and overcome it. With the help of the technology that New Earth has given us, we can save those creatures and ourselves.
It all depends on the World Council, doesn't it?
No, Jordan contradicted. It depends on the people of Earth and the rest of the solar system. The World Council represents the people, or at least it should. The people must tell the World Council that we've got to do our best to save the intelligent creatures who face extinction.
Sitting alone in her darkened office, Anita Halleck watched Jordan's earnest face with seething fury rising inside her.
He wants my job, she said to herself. All this noble talk about saving other worlds is a sham, a smokescreen he's using to keep people from understanding his real motivation.
He wants to be the next chairman of the World Council.
He's not going to get away with it.
She snapped an order to her phone console. And within a heartbeat, Rodolfo Castiglione was smiling handsomely at her from the holographic viewer built into the wall.
Is she packed and ready? Halleck asked.
Almost, said Castiglione.
Halleck could see the alien woman sitting on a couch, looking like a lost and frightened little waif.
Good,
she thought. Keep her under control. But suddenly, Aditi got to her feet and stepped to Castiglione's side.
Miss Halleck, I don't want to go to your orbital habitat. I want to be released, to be free to join my husband.
Halleck made a sweet smile.
And so you will be, Mrs. Kell. We're about to invite your husband to join you in the habitat. It's a very delightful location. I'm sure you'll both be quite happy there.
He won't come, Aditi said, her expression defiant. He'll see through your little ruse.
Her brows rising in feigned surprise, Halleck said,
If he refuses to join you, that won't be our fault, will it?
Aditi glared at her.
In the meantime, you're going to the habitat, along with Dr. Frankenheimer and several of his staff. And Signor Castiglione, of course.
In his home in the lunar city of Selene, deep below the airless surface of the moon, Douglas Stavanger watched every second of Jordan's presentation. He sat in stunned silence as he saw the images of the dead worlds, piles of living creatures sprawled on the ground, whole worlds absolutely still, silent, scrubbed of all life.
He's right, Stavanger murmured to his wife sitting beside him. Edith Elgin was a veteran of the news media business.
That's powerful stuff, she agreed.
Stavanger ordered the holographic viewer to shut down. The living room lights came up, but softly, muted to their evening level. The next meeting of the World Council is going to be a free-for-all, Stavanger said, almost grinning. It'll be tough for Halleck to hold them all in control.
Especially you, said Edith.
Me? I'm just representing Cellini, strictly an ex officio member of the Council. I don't even have a vote.
So what are you going to do?
He made a little shrug. I think tomorrow I'll ask the chairman of Cellini's executive committee if we can't offer the World Council a starship.
For free?
As a gesture toward helping solve the death wave crisis. Building a copy of the ship that went out to Sirius shouldn't be that expensive. Not when we use nanomachines to build it.
A gesture?
Or a kick in Halleck's backside to get her moving in the right direction? Stavanger chuckled. The secret of a successful politician, Edie, is to never do anything for just one reason.
And how many reasons do you have in mind?
A few, he replied almost innocently. The biggest one, of course, is to use the crisis as a stimulus to move the human race beyond the confines of the solar system, out to the stars.